It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. So, last time we spoke, the Mets seemed to be going on something, a little bit of a nice run there, right? Like, I think it was last Monday. There was hope springing eternal, however you want to put that. They won Jackie Robinson Day. As I think I mentioned last week. And now, a week later, we're looking at this Mets season as being low-key really great. Like, obviously, terrible start. But since they lost their first five games, which they did do. Like, again, that's something that happened. They ripped off 12 wins in 15 games, including six straight wins before dropping the last game of the Dodgers series yesterday. By the time you hear this, the Giants series will be close to, if not over. So I don't know how to predict that, but also the Giants haven't been looking too great this year, so I don't think it would be too much of a stretch to imagine them winning that series. And this was one of the hardest stretches of the Mets' schedule this year, almost certainly. All the teams they played were either above 500 when they played them, like on hot streaks, like we saw with the Royals and the Pirates, or are still above 500. Still good teams. They swept the Pirates. That's the other thing. There's a sweep in there. They swept the Pirates. They won against the Royals. They won the series against the Dodgers. And this might be a good year. Usually teams that start 0-5 don't have good years, right? Like, that's just something that usually happens. It's just logic. If you're bad enough to not win a single game in your first five, you're probably, like, you know. But I think that what this underscores is that baseball is a game of streaks. Because unlike football, where five losses are a death now, you know, if you start your season with five losses, that's basically it. Basketball, where five losses means a lot more, you know, whether it's the NBA where you have 82 games or the WNBA where you have 40 games. I think that number is going up this year. I'm not positive, though. Hockey, they play a lower amount of games. I don't remember the exact number. Any one of these other sports, a five-game losing streak is terrible. you know, the Islanders this year famously went on, I think, 2 6-game or 7-game losing streaks, I believe. And they just squeezed their way into the playoffs. But if the Mets had a 5-game losing, like if it, this team is projected to win 83 games, 84 games, I could see them reaching a little bit higher than that. But still, this is projected to be a wild card team. And 5-game losing streaks aren't unheard of for wild. I mean, last year's wild card team, the Arizona Diamondbacks, basically lost the entire month of July, got their back their way into the playoffs with 84 wins, and then made it to the World Series. You know, it's not unheard of for a team to lose 5 games in a row in a season that they're going to the playoffs or they're going to win the World Series. I mean, last year's Rangers team, you know, pissed away a division lead, but they still won the World Series. And I think it just happens that because it was at the start of the season and because the Mets had a disappointing offseason and because Kodai Senga went down with an injury early in spring training and all of that, that it seemed, and a lot of their guys got off to slow starts, which we'll get into in a second. It just seemed like it was going to be a really bad year. But then it wasn't. Lindor looks like he's getting his offensive groove back. You know, he's still a great defender, obviously, and that provides value even when he's not hitting. But he came around, the fans went, they did a little standing ovation for him. I know some people don't like that, or at least didn't like this version of it, because the you know, the Trey Turner one is the one that everyone referenced when talking about this. And that was organic, and it also came from a notoriously terrible fan base, but that was organic, you know, and this felt a little less organic. I mean, Steve Cohen tweeted about it and stuff like that, but it helped. It seems to have helped, and he talked about that. I mean, here's my thing. I don't care if it's organic or not. Like, this, that's our guy. Let's applaud him. Let's say, come on, we believe in you, right? Because people need that sometimes. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a nice thing to do. And I think that we could stand to be a little bit nicer in the way that we treat athletes, in the way that we treat celebrities, in the way that we treat each other. And it worked. You know, he talked about how much it meant to him. He took, you know, it was nice to see. And I think, especially given the fact that his wife tweeted out about getting death threats sent to her. Yeah, you know what? I think the Mets fans kind of owe him one. You know, in that sense, that, like, yeah, I didn't send him death threats. You almost certainly didn't send him death threats, but, or her death threats, or whoever related to Lindor death threats. But we still should be able to say, listen, they're not us. We love you, right? Like, just, that sucks. We're sorry, you know? So it's good to see. And I mean, he seems to be, the left side was the one that was taking the longest to come around. And I still wouldn't say it's all the way there, but it does seem to be showing, you know, some glimpses. And he always starts slow. I mean, this was the problem in 2021, and did he get off to a slow start in 2022, maybe? I mean, he always struggles in spring training just because he's still, I believe, you know, that's just who he is. And then he turns it on, you know, in May, June, July, August, like when the team is in the thick of it. He turns it on. I don't care if the team's gonna win 12 of 15 with him being like, let's go. I'll take that. Another thing, Starling Marte, reports of his offensive death have been greatly exaggerated, but defensively, it's not what you want. He's hitting, although it's slightly empty. Like, I think he's only slugging 400, right? It's just masked by the fact that he's hitting a lot of, like, singles and stuff like that and stealing bases. He's still a great base runner, but in the outfield, he has somehow gotten, I think, worse, which was impressive because he already drove me crazy in 2022. I don't know if it's just he never really had great reads in right field. That just is something that's happening. But yeah, it's It's not what you want to see out there. It's been a lot of balls, and it's also cases of, like, he's not catching it, and then he's not running after the ball on the field, allowing for, like, extra bases to be gotten. It'll probably grade out positively with his offense. Like he'll grade out positive overall, but this is going to be, I'm actually curious to see, because we're small sample size, of course. But we're, what, 3 weeks into the season, almost a full month into the season? So let's see if we can pull up the outs above average, because I'm curious to see what he looks like. Team? Mets. I should have done this before, but just came to my mind now. Yeah, he's been worth -3 OAA, outs above average. Let's look at what his profile. Ooh, Pete's also looked not great on defense, and that is that's playing out in the fact that he is -2. That's above average. I think it's really heartening that Baby is 0, because I feel like we've seen him be really bad in the past. And he's not great to his left, but that literally does not matter, because he has Francisco Lindor next to him, who is great to his right. So, you know. Let's see. Let's look up Starling Marte. Scintillating radio right here. I have to speed this up. So his fielding, he's a 4th percentile in terms of range, 5th percentile in terms of arm value, 9th percentile in terms of sprint speed. He's providing a lot of great batting run value, but actually his base running isn't great either, which is surprising, but it's not what you love to see here. But anyway, in terms of the players that have been coming around, Jeff McNeil has kind of looked like old Jeff McNeil. Like old Jeff McNeil of a couple years ago. Not him old. Like, he looks good. After his cold stretch start of the year, he's been getting a lot of hits now. He started the season, I felt like his batting average was, like, perpetually under 100, which is, like, you know, not, again, not great. Kind of want to get on the freeway there. He is currently batting 254, which, again, he was, to start off the season, he was, hitting, like, 029 or something like that. It was bad at a certain point. Everything has been sort of firing, with the exception of Francisco Alvarez got hurt during the first game of the Dodgers series. He was running around, he was running the bases, he was running to first. You know, obviously he's taken a lot of hits off his hand. He jammed his thumb on the base a couple nights ago. He was at first. He noticed that the ball flew past him because it was a terrible throw by the pitcher, I believe. So he went to round first to go to second. And he sort of did like a little Looney Tunes, like his feet slid out from underneath him. So he put his hand out to catch himself. You could see his thumb just bent in a really weird direction. He kept running. He got the second. It was hurt. He stayed on the bases. They pulled him before the start of the next inning, before he, you know, had to catch. And he has a torn ligament. I don't know if they've said exactly what ligament it is, but Brett Beatty said that it's the same injury he had last year, which is a torn UCL. But specifically in the thumb area, I believe. So that's not like a Tommy John. It's a 6 to 8 week recovery period, I believe. Beatty, when he had his in 2022, he got the surgery. They were optimistically like, well, you can come back in 5. And he's like, if the Mets are still in the playoffs, but they got out of the playoffs, so he slowed down his rehab. But my guess is Alvarez will probably be out until close to the All-Star break. Which sucks. They called up Tomas Nido again. I personally am of the belief that Nido should probably be starting now over Narvaez. Like, he should just slot into Alvarez's spot, because you're not going to get any offense with Nido, most likely. But, like, Narvaez is such a butcher behind the plate. Like, he is bad catching, that, like, any positive output he's doing at the plate, which is also not a ton, is probably going to be outweighed by the fact that he, like, can't catch, can't throw, can't frame, can't do anything. It was a stupid signing at the time, and it continues to be a stupid signing. So, that's been the week plus in Mets baseball. And I just want to get into this because we talked about this a little while ago and I said I'd bring it back up. But we got, I believe a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago or so, or last week, the federal case involving eBay and the gambling debts with Ohtani, where A, he took more of Ohtani's money than anyone believed, and B, it does look like it's just him. Which, you know, I'll admit, wasn't Ohtani. It looked like it could have been, obviously, because if it was him, that's the start of that was how it would look. But it looks like instead it was just Ipe and Ohtani's team trying to get ahead of it and cover it up without letting Ohtani in on most of it, which is not good. It looks like Ipe was, like, intelligent in the way that he sort of worked his way into Ohtani's life and, like, his inner circle, and set it up so that he would have access to those sort of things and it wouldn't be out of the ordinary. And it also makes him look incredibly dumb because he was basically texting his bookmakers, spelling things out like, oh, I'm really bad at betting here, in like a hilarious way. It felt very, and I'm not the first person to make this comparison, it felt very Coen Brothers. I would like to, this would be a funny movie, although I don't know that it ever gets made because I can't imagine Ohtani wants that to happen, but I would like to see like a loose adaptation of these accounts. Maybe I should write it. If I was Ohtani, I would clear house. Like, he got the contract. I would clear house. I would tell Nez to get the hell out because it seems like his management, his agent, and Ipe were all working together to make sure Ohtani didn't find out anything that they didn't think he had to. But this involved, like, millions and millions of Ohtani's dollars. Like, his money that he earned. What's also crazy is, like, it was his angel's money that was just literally sitting in a bank. And he was like, yeah, don't touch that. Like, which is so, imagine being in that position. Imagine being, having that many millions that you can go, yeah, that's my millions that you don't use. I wish I had a bank account full of millions that I didn't use. But yeah, I assume there's going to be more around this just because, again, it's a federal court case now. So we'll probably, I know they brought him into court in shackles, which seems like a lot for a white collar crime. But I assume there'll probably be just maybe one or two more updates on this, just in terms of, like, the court case and everything like that. But yeah, Ohtani innocent. So, it was fun speculating while it lasted. Now, it sucks for him. Like, really, like, that just fucking sucks for him. That, like, this guy that he really trusted was basically using him. Fucking sucks. So, why don't we take a break and we get back? I want to talk about, a recent bill that was attempted to pass Kansas did but didn't. So we'll talk about that in the state of Kansas. We'll get into that in a second.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
All right, and we're back. So, in Kansas, in the Kansas state legislation, they have a very Republican state legislation, very hard right state legislation, and the governor recently, who is Democratic, vetoed a trans care ban for youth. She vetoed a bill that did that. She vetoed a couple other bills. But she did let pass her desk without her signature, but she didn't veto it, a bill that would mandate identification to view content, quote, harmful to minors online, which defines sexual content as including masturbation, sexual intercourse, and homosexuality. the state legislation probably has the votes now. Like, the last time stuff like this was trying, they didn't have the votes, but they, from what I've read, they probably have the votes now to override vetoes and to put through these laws. So this is probably staring down the barrel of a lot of people in Kansas. What's concerning about this is the language. Okay, so, like, if you... We'll get into a second why I don't think this will work anyway, but, like, if you want to say, well, minors shouldn't be able to see sexual content online. Okay? I don't know. I'm not, like, puritanical on this sort of stuff. And also, like, minors is, what, 17 and under? So, like, 17-year-olds, really, 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, like... I'd be much more concerned with, like, them seeing violent shit online than sexual shit. But the use of the word homosexuality is just so broad and vague, right? Because if it was just homosexual intercourse, which would still be weird to single that out, but you wouldn't need to be qualified under sexual intercourse. But to put homosexuality there is so broad and vague that it feels like it could include anything. Any sort of content with homosexual characters, homosexual themes, even just references. And when you make the language this vague, which again is something that the legislators in the state are choosing to do, right? Because this is a bill that was passed by Republicans, written by them. You give an inch for this, and the homophobes and the bigots and the people in charge who believe in this stuff will take a mile. Right, so you could say, well, we don't want them viewing sex, and people are going to go, yes, but the act of homosexuality is when one queer person exists, right? And what this bill has included in it is that websites will be fined $10,000 for each instance a minor accesses the content, and parents can sue for up to $50,000 in damages from these websites. And... this is baffling to me. It feels impossible to enforce. You know what I'm saying? Like, A, we live in a world full of VPNs, right? Where you can change your location on the computer at any point. It just feels like it's impossible. I mean, when I was growing up, I'm 26 years old. When I was growing up, I remember Facebook first becoming a thing when I was in elementary school, right? Like, my parents signed up for it. And I wanted to sign up for it, because I had friends who I knew were on it. And they were like, you have to be 13 or older, and then you just lied on there. And a lot of websites were like that. They'd be like, you have to be 18 and older to sign up for this contest, and then we just lie. And obviously the process for identification there is very lax, but, like, where there's a will, there's a way. People are going to figure out how to get through this, because they figure out how to get through everything. It's not... how are you enforcing this? Because also, like, what do you do about, like, here in New York, it's not going to matter. So why are websites going to, like, I guess websites could just shut themselves off in Kansas, but, like, is YouTube going to shut itself off in Kansas? Like, that's just, it feels bizarre. This feels impossible to enforce. You know, like, so many things that they try to pass. This feels impossible to enforce. Like, it's just trying to tally up points for your side. And I'm just so curious of what will qualify for it, you know? Like, take aside all the websites that would have explicit sexual content and stuff like that. Is YouTube gonna be fined every time a 15-year-old watches a edit from Bottoms, the movie? Or if a 16-year-old watches a video essay about the movie Carol, you know? Or, I mean, there's a million gay YouTubers. I don't know if it's still the same. When I was growing up, YouTubers were, like, there was, like, a vast majority of them, and now I feel like it's only Mr. Beast, but, like, there's gotta be gay ones on there. Or, like, is that gonna happen every single time? Is, if you go to, like, HBO.com, and you find, I'm trying to think of a show that they have that has, like, does this include streaming services? Because, like, you know what I've been rewatching on HBO Max? I've been rewatching Degrassi, The Next Generation. Great show. But, like, is HBO Max going to get punished if a child watches a show made for young people. Because that's the thing. Degrassi is a show made for young people to watch. There's no explicit sexual content on that show. But there are queer characters. Is HBO now going to get fined? Is, like, parents going to sue because their kid saw Paige and Alex dancing at the nightclub during the after party for Kevin Smith's movie premiere? I've seen a lot of Degrassi. Is Netflix going to get fined every time a kid goes on and watches, I don't know what shitty stuff they have on Netflix now. Amazon Prime. Is a 16-year-old going to, you know, go on Amazon Prime and watch A League of Their Own? Here's another question. Prime sells, like, Pride Flags, I assume. Do they get fined for that? You know? Like, if a kid goes on and looks at a Pride Flag, like, oh, I'm going to buy a Pride Flag, like, that's homosexuality. Are they going to get fined for that? Because it's anything can be content. Which is why I hate the word content, but anything can be it. And anything can be considered sexual content under this purview. This feels like a Pandora's box moment, right? Like, this feels like the way that, like, Florida's Don't Say Gay bill led to this. Or Missouri's draconian trans health care bills ushered in a wave of bills in that vein from other states. But, like, there's a line that can be drawn here from, like, this, that. But, like, Florida's Don't Say Gay bill really feels like the start of this, right? Because that was the start of, like, oh, we're doing this to protect the children. But, like, what they think is happening isn't actually happening, right? Because they just refuse to engage with it. So, Kansas Republicans are watching, are like, wow, kids love these gay movies. We can't let them watch those anymore because it's just people having gay sex all over the place. And it's like, no, but, like, gay people can exist outside of the context of their sexual activity. You know what I'm saying? Or Florida. Well, we can't have these teachers, you know, telling these kids all about gay sex. They're not. They're, you know, going, what name do you want to be called? Which teachers were asking kids when I was in school. And I'm sure for decades before that, when teachers would go around and they'd be like, do you have a nickname you want to be called? Right? And Michael would say, yeah, call me Mike. And James would call, yeah, call me Jimmy. You know, like, that's what people are getting mad about here. Or they're forcing homosexuality on my kids. And it's like, no, they're just acknowledging the fact that, like, some kids have two moms. Some kids have two dads. It just happens now. These states are making themselves so impossible to be lived in by these people that, like, I live on Long Island, and there's clearly a bunch of young people leaving because it is impossible to live here because it's so expensive, and you're not actually, like, nobody actually cares. They're just trying to ban trans women from playing roller derby in a rec league instead of actually doing something about something. So they're just going to drive people to the coasts. That's terrible. And it's like, these kids are already dealing with so much. I don't know when I was a kid. Like, when I was still figuring out who I was watching stuff on the down low. And when I say stuff, I mean But I'm a Cheerleader. And being like, oh my god, this is But I'm a Cheerleader. Or, like, reading The Miseducation of Cameron Post and being like, oh my god, I feel like I'm Cameron Post. You know? I wasn't talking about that with anyone. I bought Cameron Post for my Kindle, and I watched But I'm a Cheerleader. I got that at a library, but I watched other stuff like that on my iPad, and it was, like, I was already doing it in secret, and now you're basically telling these kids, like, if you do this, we're gonna arrest you, like, because that's what it feels like. It's not gonna feel like to the kid, like, oh, my parents are gonna sue for $50,000 in damages, and websites will be fined $10,000 for me doing this. They're gonna look at this and be like, "I'm in trouble, and I shouldn't be doing this, and this is wrong, right?" Because that's the logical endpoint of that line of thinking, is that this is wrong because people are getting fined for this. You know, it's like, you know, I'm trying to think of something you get fined for and don't get arrested for. It's like blowing red lights. Like, I shouldn't do that because I'm going to get fined for it. Because wrong. And it just, it bugs me because they're doing all of this stuff and kids aren't going to stop doing this because they're going to try and find themselves. All you're doing, you know, it's the abortion laws, it's the trans health care laws, it's this law, it's that law. Kids are still going to do it. You're just putting them in more danger. Because you do this, and now this tells the kids who aren't queer, kids who are straight, people who like that sort of stuff are deviants. They're wrong. That's no good. And then they're going to start bullying kids. People, this, in and of itself, in a vacuum, does not kill people. The logical endpoint of stuff like this results in people being dead. Because it's dangerous. It tells other people that they are wrong. Tells themselves that they're wrong. So you're going to have an uptick in crime. You're going to have an uptick in you know, mental health issues, suicidal depression, attempts at suicide. And for what? Because you want to win a few points in taking on the woke mob. Oh, we showed that woke mob who's boss. It's fucking stupid. It bugs me. It really, really bugs me that stuff like this is happening. Because if these people do this and they hide behind the idea of religion constantly, they can't just say they don't like it. You notice that they can't just be like, I don't like that. That makes me feel weird. Because that's the end point of it. It's that makes me feel weird. Right? Because there's plenty of Christians and plenty of people who are religious who can look at queer people and go, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. But it's always like, oh, well, this book told me so. But what that book actually tells people is love your neighbor. You know, honor your mother and father. Honor your God. But they want to take it to the woke mob so they can rack up some money. You know who would be fucking woke? Not to do like a preacher thing, but you know who would be woke in today's world? It's a 33-year-old carpenter named Jesus Christ. But, like, that dude hung around with 12 other guys and a prostitute. Like, that guy, these people would hate him. They would, if they saw one guy hanging out with 12 other guys and one prostitute, they'd be like, that's gotta be banned. Kids can't interact with that. But instead, they stand there and they go, that guy told me to hate people. And that guy was always like, just love people. You know? It just bugs me, man. So, anyway. Let's get off of this before I go crazy. So why don't we take a break? And when we come back, I have a somewhat unorthodox movie minute for what I usually do. But I'm excited because I've been doing a little binge watching the last week or so. So excited to recommend some stuff.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, and we're back. So, this past week plus, I've been sort of binge watching. So, I've been doing some TV this month. I don't do a lot of TV usually. And it started with The Sopranos, which is good. But sometimes, you know, I don't know about you, my attention span is weird in that I need to be, like, obsessed with something. And what that something has manifested in was that I went, oh, 30 for 30 is on Hulu, and I've really only watched, like, a couple here and there. Like, I've seen the OJ one, Made in America. I've seen, Once Upon a Time in Queens. I think maybe I've seen one or two others. But I've never actually watched them. like watch them. So I'm like most of the way through the first collection. I think I'm through like, oh, I want to say like 15 or 16 of them. So I'm like about halfway through. And I want to recommend a few of them because they're all on Hulu. And I think most of them are on Disney Plus because Disney owns Hulu. So, and then I know, I'm pretty sure the first collection of them, like the first group of 30 for 30 at least, was on physical media. You should be able to rent it places. You could probably find it at your local library. But I want to just give my recommendations from the group that I've seen thus far. So, my favorite ones. I'm going to give you my four favorite 30 for 30s I've watched. My favorite one I watched last night. And it's somewhat topical, given that O.J. Simpson recently died. And it's not O.J. Made in America. Although, that is conceptually one of my favorite ones. I think it's a fantastic documentary. I just haven't watched it in 8 years or whenever I've watched that for the first time. Maybe 7 years. Maybe I watched it just before the Oscars. It's 2017. But there's one on there. It's 53 minutes long. It feels like it's 5 minutes long. It flew, like, in the best way. Called June 17th, 1994. It's made by Brett Morgan, who you may know. He's a documentarian of some note. He's done a bunch of stuff. He did Moon Age Daydream from 2 years ago. He did Kurt Cobain montage. The Kid Stays in the Picture. Jane by Jane Goodall. On the Ropes. He's done a bunch of stuff. Moon Age Daydream is great too. If you get a chance to watch that, I love that. And Kurt Cobain, the Kurt Cobain one was great too. But June 17th, 1994 is a 53-minute documentary, and what he usually does, his style of making documentaries, it is very, it's not a ton of talking heads, it's not like, this is what happened, and this happened, and this happened, it puts you in the moment. So he puts you in the shoes of being alive and aware on June 17th, 1994, and he does this through several sporting events. The Rangers just won the Stanley Cup, so it's the parade. Arnold Palmer golfing in a tournament. What else? The Knicks, the NBA Finals with the Knicks and the Rockets. There might be one or two other events in there. Ken Griffey tying Babe Ruth's record of the most home runs before June 30th during the 1994 baseball season, the commencement of the 94 FIFA World Cup, and what it does is it sort of puts you in this whirlwind of all of that, while cutting back to the fact that all this is happening. These people are on such incredible highs and lows. And O.J. Simpson is in the Ford Bronco in the freeway chase. And the finals part is really interesting because that game, they kept, I was born in 1997. So for me, O.J. Simpson has always been a murderer. There was never a point in my life where I didn't think of him as that. So the finals game cut between the chase and the game. Which had to be very frustrating if you were a Knicks fan. I'm personally not a Knicks fan, but I could imagine that would be very frustrating to be watching a game being like, I get it. This is huge news. Can I watch the game? It's like, let me know if something's really happening, you know? Like, and obviously we have the hindsight of knowing that nothing happens, but like, in the moment, he could have killed himself at any moment. It's incredible. It's so well edited. It flies. It got to the end. I was like, is this ending? And I checked and it was like, there was like 2 minutes left. And I was like, I feel like I've been watching this for 5 minutes. How is this ending already? And it was. It flew. Another one I loved is The U, which is about the University of Miami Hurricanes. I think that one's about 2 hours long. It's a longer one. And that one's really great in sort of showing how the University of Miami Hurricanes sort of had this very low moment, and then they had this tremendous rise, and then sort of fell a little bit. And I know there's a sequel to this in the series. I'm excited to get to it, but I'm watching them in order, pretty much. There's one about the two Escobars that I want to get to, but it was 2 hours long, and last night I just wasn't feeling it. and then I haven't turned it on yet. I'll probably watch it tomorrow. But yeah, The You, incredible. It feels like a very traditional sports documentary in a really good way. Like, it feels very, it's exactly what you would want it to be. It was the first one of the series when I went, that I went, oh, these are good. Like, that was, like, the one that sold me. I think that's, like, the fourth or fifth one. Really, really fantastic. Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks. I love this one. I think it's really good. It moves really well. I love, again, I'm not a Knicks fan, but one of my favorite things about basketball is that Spike Lee is, like, an elite-level troll to other basketball players, and he's, you know, 5'4", 5'6", or whatever, standing on the court, dressed in all blue and orange, like a little tiny clown, and he's out there, like, chanting Cheryl at Reggie Miller, and I think what's great about it is that they got Reggie Miller and Spike Lee and all of these people that you would need, Cheryl Miller, they got all of these people and interviewed all of them, and it moves so well. It's again, it's 53 minutes long, and it just, it's like, plays like, I said 53, it might be a little bit longer than that. I know there's a few, most of them in the first set group of them are like 53 minutes long, but that one might be like closer to 80 minutes long. Winning Time. Okay, it's 68 minutes long. So it's like an hour and 8 minutes long. And it does, it flies, it's really well cut. You feel sort of the frustration of everyone involved. I've been watching a lot of stuff about the Knicks in this particularly, but like, God, I'm not a Knicks fan. I'm a Bulls fan. I'd like to see them win one this year. I think their fans need it. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you might be a Knicks fan. If you're a Mets fan, that's probably a decent shot. You're a Knicks fan. I'm just the weird one who's a Bulls fan. So, you know, I think that'd be nice. I have friends who are Knicks fans. I'd like them to be happy for a little bit. You know, my team, Gotham, won last year. That was good. And the Liberty, obviously, are going to contend again this year. I want my friends to have some happiness. I'd like to see the Knicks to win. But it's very funny. Winning Time is really good in that it's really, really funny. Not all of these are funny. But, like, Reggie Miller has such a great sense of humor. Cheryl Miller has a great sense of humor. Spike Lee has a great sense of humor. So they're, like, goofing around in the interviews, too. It's fun. And then the final one I want to recommend is called, and I want to give you the full title here, no crossover, The Trial of Allen Iverson. And it's made by Steve James, who did Hoop Dreams, which is a fantastic documentary. I might recommend that at some point. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And he's really good at capturing sports. What this one does that's different than Hoop Dreams is that it's not in the present, right? Because Hoop Dreams, he was filming and that stuff happened. Allen Iverson, he's evaluating it. And what's interesting about it is he's so personally connected to it. I know some people don't like this, but he's so personally connected to it because so much of the story takes place in his hometown. He's from Hampton, Virginia. Allen Iverson's from Hampton, Virginia. And it is examining the race relations of the area, both current day for this documentary, which is about 10 to 15 years old, both current day and also back when the Allen Iverson trial was happening, and how it was a lot of people who, for whatever reason, wanted to see him go down, even though there was no actual evidence of his involvement other than just being there. But you can't see anything. They play the footage in the thing. You can't see anything in it. Other than a bunch of people fighting. And it's the black versus white. They also get into it being a class thing. Rich versus poor. You know, and not the people he attacked being rich, but that the establishment there had more money than Allen Iverson did. Allen Iverson grew up in a house with his parents and his grandparents and his cousins and his aunts and uncles. Like, he grew up in a house packed with people. They didn't have a lot of money. He was going to be the one that got out. And it's so enlightening. And I think Steve James is what's great about Steve James's involvement in it is that because he's from the area and because he made Hoop Dreams, you can kind of feel there's this sense of ease from everyone involved, that they feel like they can talk to him, whether or not it's a good thing. The only person he wasn't able to interview is Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson said no. And I understand why. But he got the other co-defendants in. He got friends of his. He got people who Lila loved him, who hated him, who rooted for him, who rooted against him. Because he played for the... there was like two high schools in Hampton. One was Hampton, one was Bethel. He played for Bethel. And Hampton always won everything, but then Bethel won when Allen Iverson was there. And that was a whole thing. And I found it so fascinating. And this one, I believe, is 1 hour and 20 minutes or so. And it's really, these four are really worth your time. And I would say if you have Hulu, I would just start watching them. There's only like 2 or 3 of them so far that I think are like totally skippable. The Jimmy the Greek one, bad. What was the other one that was really bad? The one about fantasy baseball had too many like wacky recreations. Did not enjoy that. But for by and large, the 16th Man about Nelson Mandela and the rugby team right after the end of apartheid and Mandela's election, really powerful. Run Ricky Run, that's a great story, and the access that director got was incredible. I'm currently watching the one about Michael Jordan when he retired from basketball. That's really good. These are really worth your time. Like, I was surprised at how much I loved them. I really was. I'm like hooked on them. But yeah, 30 for 30. Those four specifically, but just generally 30 for 30. Thank you for listening. If you like this show, I assume you listen to the other shows on this network, but if not, there's a quite a good selection of them on there, on the Home Run Applesauce Network. There's From Complex to Queens, A Pod of Their Own, Today You'll Love Tomorrow, the World Series. And if you like those, if you want to try them, subscribe to the channel. Now, if you like all those and you like this one, I suggest you go. There's a link in the description, or if you want to go to homerunapplesauce.com, there's a link on there to our Patreon. $5 a month. Not that much. If you really enjoy this stuff, not that much at all. Pay that. It all comes back to us. And that gets you access to our exclusive Discord server, exclusive podcast episodes, emergency pods, other shows on the Patreon, monthly playlists. Yeah. It's so worth it. And, you know, a nice little extra bonus for you. If you really dig the shows on this network, I recommend it. If you want to follow us, me, this show specifically, we are on Twitter at FIBpod, on Instagram at FlushingIsBurningPod, and you can email us at FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week. See you then.